Michael Shermer's Principles of Skepticism. What skateboarding taught Kimi Katiti about critical race theory. And why both sides of the political aisles are now embracing authoritarian tendencies. Welcome to Fair News Weekly. To read all of the articles discussed in this podcast, please visit fairforall.org/news. The Fair Story curriculum is a fact-based approach to teaching students about racism that exposes students to the histories, experiences, struggles, accomplishments, and contributions from Americans of diverse backgrounds. This week, our three-part History of Slavery video series is now available to watch on YouTube. The first video covers the deeply immoral practice of slavery as it occurred throughout history all over the world, while the final two focus specifically on slavery in the United States and its eventual abolition. In case you missed it, Fair advisor Wilfred Riley published an essay on our Fair for All Substack about affirmative action inspired by a now-deleted tweet by Ibram X. Kendi, commenting on white students lying about their race on college admissions forms. Riley's essay is a great example of the kind of content we love bringing to our readers, but we would also love to publish content from you, the parent, employee, or student. If you would like to submit your writing to our Substack, please check out our submission guidelines on our website. This week, Fair advisor Michael Shermer expertly walks us through several foundational principles of skepticism that we should all use when evaluating any claim. For instance, our starting assumption should always be that a claim is not true unless demonstrated otherwise, and the burden of proof rests solely on the person making the claim, not on the skeptic. Shermer explains that extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence and calls on many of us to be a little bit more skeptical about many extraordinary claims currently being made in the name of social justice. He declares, "Pursuing social justice is a clear good, but for the same reason we need skepticism towards once dominant ideas like that the sun revolves around the earth, or that the universe began 6,000 years ago, or that disease is caused by miasma, in order to arrive at more accurate and more useful ways of seeing the world, if we want to do social justice right, skepticism towards extraordinary claims being made in the name of social justice must be a core part of our toolkit." In a new video, artist and writer Kimi Katiti tells us her story about what skateboarding taught her about critical race theory. Given the underrepresentation of dark-skinned people in skateboarding, CRT taught her to view skate parks cynically as hostile and unwelcoming places for people like her. However, when she actually started visiting skate parks, she quickly discovered that reality bore no resemblance to the dangerous environment that CRT taught her to expect. She says, "I first went into Lake Street and Cherry Park skate parks, braced for microaggressions and an assertion of dominance by people who didn't look like me. But, to my surprise, I was met with an extension of kindness and courteousness by the people who weren't supposed to possess either of those qualities." Fair diversity is our pro-human approach to diversity, equity, and inclusion training based on over 20 years of empirical research. Rather than building social identities around our differences and immutable characteristics, fair diversity trainings focus on shared identity, common ground, and our similarities to foster greater peace, communication, and relationships. Our training teaches us how to honor unique cultural and social identities while keeping our common humanity at the forefront. In our latest video, Fair advisor Daryl Davis outlines the core principles of our Fair Diversity training program. That and more are available at fairdiversity.org. Last week, Letitia Kim, head of the Fair Legal Network, participated on a panel titled "Classrooms, Curricula, and the Law" at Federalist Society's 2021 National Lawyers Convention in Washington, D.C. The panel discussed the wisdom and constitutionality of laws banning divisive concepts from being taught in classrooms and the legal remedies available if and when those concepts are implemented and/or compelled in public and private schools. For Quillette, editor Jonathan Kay wrote about a meeting in Canada where 53 top Canadian university administrators came together to discuss their new policy goals and guiding principles for higher education. Given the intense financial strain the pandemic has inflicted upon the Canadian university system, one might assume that such a meeting would focus on finances and building new educational models designed to ensure high enrollment. Yet, the 89-page meeting agenda that was given to Kay revealed a near-exclusive focus on radical ideologies couched in the language of social justice and race consciousness. He states, "The report's main theme is that university leaders must decisively reject the idea of colorblindness, which the author asserts should be properly termed color evasion, in favor of becoming race-conscious individuals who explicitly reflect their ethno-racial identity and group membership." Kay further described how diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives have embedded their precepts into the ostensibly neutral administrative machinery of the institutions they serve, which he believes has created a kind of ideological positive feedback loop that makes future reversal nearly impossible. In the Journal of Free Black Thought Substack, writer and podcaster Ada Akpala writes about her experience growing up in Nigeria and the ways Western media tends to inaccurately portray African countries as underdeveloped and dangerous. Akpala also describes how, in Nigeria, skin color is not viewed as a significant part of one's identity due to the high levels of racial homogeneity. Since nearly 99.9% of Nigerian citizens are black, politics tends to focus on practical issues like government, corruption, and violence. But when Akpala moved to Britain in the year 2000, she was taken aback by how much race seemed to matter. She explains, "In Nigeria, immutable characteristics were immaterial. I remember that more emphasis was placed on a person's character, integrity, values, actions, work ethic, traditional values, and so on. Being black in Nigeria meant nothing at all. However, being black in the UK meant something, and in some situations, it meant everything." Akpala explained that the most difficult thing to navigate in the UK for her wasn't racism per se, but rather trying to constantly stay within the obscure confines of what it means to be black in a society that expected her to put race at the forefront of her identity. For Politico, author Mark Brolin asks, "Have modern politics become too tribal?" To assist in navigating this complex question, Brolin enlisted the help of social psychologist Jonathan Haidt, who looks at political tribalism through an evolutionary lens. According to Haidt, our tribal instincts are a product of psychological evolution, and because of this, we should not expect to find easy solutions to the problem of political tribalism. However, Haidt says there may be practical ways to design a system that pays heed to our inherent shortcomings in order to help mitigate our tribal instincts. For instance, he believes moving away from a two-party system may help incentivize alliances and compromise, since people will no longer feel as though they are competing with an all-or-nothing game with a sworn enemy. Other ways to mitigate our tribal instincts could be to require open primaries for all elections so people don't have to be a member of a certain party to vote, or to have a social media overhaul that allows users to filter their content based on both nuance and aggression in order to greatly dampen the powers of the extremes. For Reason, Stephen Greenhut outlines two basic views of society and the role that politics should play in it. One view is what he calls the traditional libertarian view, which sees the public square as neutral and the role of government as that of a restrained referee that allows people to live outside their lives largely as they choose. The other view is a type of populist authoritarianism that rejects neutrality and views the government as a tool to actively advance the public good. Greenhut believes that politics is making everyone mad because the limits of governmental power have been eroded and both sides of the political aisle are now embracing more authoritarian tendencies. Because of this, elections are increasingly being viewed as do-or-die situations. He states, that has turned politics into an endless grudge match, given the stakes always seem so high. The rhetorical fervor has convinced many Americans that they must always be active in politics, lest their way of life and religious faith get cast onto the dustbin. If we want to turn down the political temperature, Greenhut believes we need to recommit to America's original principles of traditional libertarianism. For The Spectator, former Sussex University philosopher professor Kathleen Stock described the campaign of harassment and intimidation she endured for her views on sex and gender that led to her recent resignation. She questions how this seemingly bizarre moment in time will be viewed in the future. While many have criticized Stock for speaking with and writing for outlets that are associated with the political right, she remains unperturbed by these attempts at guilt by association. In response, Stock claims that an ideology with ambitions to erase fundamental categories like woman and man will annoy nearly everyone, right-wingers included. Furthermore, Stock believes that writing for predominantly right-leaning publications in recent years has given her the valuable opportunity to share her feminist viewpoints with an audience that may not have had much prior exposure to them. "And that's fine by me," says Stock. For the Manhattan Institute, Fair Advisor Glenn Lowry, along with Jason Riley and John Wood Jr., make the case for Black patriotism in response to the increasingly common narrative that portrays America as a fundamentally racist and evil country. While it is important to honestly address our nation's past atrocities, shouldn't America also be commended for what it has become, however falteringly, over the course of the last three centuries, the greatest force for human liberty on the planet? In this discussion, Professor Lowry and The Wall Street Journal's Jason Riley lay out the case for unabashed Black patriotism, while John Wood Jr. addresses their arguments' strengths and weaknesses. While the speakers do not agree on every point, they each firmly believe that the narrative eventually adopted by most Black Americans will be extremely consequential for America's future. For Unheard, Fair Advisor Ayan Hirsi Ali wrote about her concerns with our educational institutions. Hirsi Ali, an outspoken critic of fundamentalist Islam, recalled the harassment she received from the Council of Islamic Relations when Brandeis University, whose motto is "Truth Even Unto Its Innermost Parts," offered her an honorary degree. In response to public pressure, Brandeis rescinded their offer. While Hirsi Ali learned to expect this kind of extreme censorious attitude from Islamic organizations that viewed her as an apostate and heretic, she now believes it was wrong to dismiss this censorious attitude as an Islamist impulse in light of the cancel culture mobs she now frequently endures from within our ostensibly secular universities. She states, "We have reached a point where grace and forgiveness are near extinct on American campuses, where reputations built over decades can be destroyed in a week. Some people still describe the phenomenon as political correctness, but this is much more like a religious movement. It's hardly surprising that the Islamists' opportunity to piggyback on existing illiberal and intolerant forces is now even greater." Hirsi Ali believes that many of our universities have abandoned their primary goal of protecting free speech and the unfettered pursuit of truth, and hopes that she can help restore these values as a founding faculty fellow at the New University of Austin. For the Fordham Institute, Fair Advisor Robert Pondicio wrote about the media coverage over so-called critical race theory and laments its lack of sobriety and subtlety when explaining complicated issues to interested non-experts is supposed to be their job. Pondicio's colleague, Rich Hess, wrote a report investigating how media has been covering CRT by examining all articles mentioning CRT published in major news outlets, such as The New York Times, The Washington Post, The Wall Street Journal, and other press outlets. According to Pondicio, he found that coverage about critical race theory has tended to focus on what is not controversial, notably whether or not schools should teach about racism and slavery, while eliding almost entirely its most inflammatory facets, specifically CRT's rejection of ideas and principles that are foundational to Western thought and values. Additionally, Hess found that CRT's skepticism of rational thought, liberalism, universal values, and objective knowledge was mentioned in less than 5% of CRT's news articles. Pondicio points out that these omissions are extremely concerning because failure to note any intellectual objection leaves readers free to assume that objections to CRT are rooted in racism, not rationality or a defense of Enlightenment views and values. Finally, if you liked this podcast, subscribe, share with a friend, and leave us a rating and review. Make sure to check out our newsletter and weekly roundup to read more into any of this week's stories, or visit fairforall.org/news. Donations are always welcome at fairforall.org/donate.